Well, Malaysia's non-Nigerian and notoriously recalcitrant Prime Minister has submitted his resignation. But that doesn't mean Anwar Ibrahim will get the job. I would remind you, dear listeners, that Ibrahim's been on the program a couple of times, as has his wife and as has his daughter. Now, while the resignation has surprised some observers, Malaysian politics watcher James Chin predicted this very situation last year, and he was told by many in Malaysia that he was spreading fake news. So what are the events meant for Malaysian politics? James Chin is director of the Asia Institute Tasmania at the University of Tasmania. James, welcome back.
Thank you.
The media are reporting this as a shock resignation. You are not shocked?
No, I'm not. I think the tensions have been building up for some time. So what we saw recently in the last 48 hours or the last 2 or 3 days is simply accumulation of all the tensions that has been built up since last year.
In November last year, after some by-election results in Malaysia, you wrote an article for the Lowy Institute called "The Ultimate Game of Thrones is Malaysia." What were you on about?
So basically, I was arguing that there has been a significant shift in the Malays' polity, and that the Malays were very worried, or they bought into the narrative, the false narrative that the current government, the Pakatan government that won election in May 2018, was actually controlled by the Chinese. So basically, the losing part, people call the UMNO and PAS, they got together after the elections and they started this narrative that the Pakatan government under Mahathir was actually controlled by the Chinese. And that proved very effective. It was so effective that they won 3 by-elections in a row. And that really, really got the government worried. In particular, Mahathir's party and the other Malay members of the government. So they decided that it was time perhaps to rejig the Pakatan government and to try to find a new formula to make the government more Malay-centric, to show the Malay voters that this is really a Malay government rather than a multiracial government.
At that same time, I remember you writing that Ibrahim will not get a chance to be PM and real change is in doubt. And you paint a portrait of a Prime Minister who's never been a genuine reformist, but is rather addicted to power in and of itself.
Yes, I think perhaps the word addiction is a bit too strong, but Mahathir has a very strong will in order to change Malaysia. He has always been very consistent. If you look throughout his political life, he wants to build Malaysia into a modern state. And unfortunately, he regretted his first 22 years in power. If you look at some of the interviews he did after he retired the first time, he said very openly that one of the mistakes he made was that he spent too much time building infrastructure in Malaysia, but he forgot to change the mentality of the Malay population.
I don't know if you were in Australia at the time of the famous Kirribilli agreement, where Hawke and Keating hammered out a sort of a transition of power, which Hawke then reneged on. But it comes to mind now because of what Ibrahim describes as treachery after the resignation letter to the King was released.
Yes, I think what we saw over the last several days is really that we're seeing Mahathir at his prime, at his political prime. He has set up a situation where, which is quite unique in the sense that both sides of the political equation think that he is the only person who can save Malaysia. So going forward, I fully expect him to be confirmed as the incoming prime minister, even though he's the interim prime minister. And that will be unique in Malaysian history in that he will be the only person has been appointed prime minister 3 times.
But he's also, of course, the oldest prime minister in the world. I can't think of any older in modern history.
Sure. But then again, he has good genes, so he'll probably live to be 100.
and get a nice telegram from our queen. Okay, James, is there a way of describing for Australian listeners all the different groups that now make up, well, the now former ruling coalition, Pakatan Harapan?
Sure. I think the one way of looking at it is that for a very long time, Malaysian society is divided along ethnic and religious lines. So basically, for the last 60 years, Malaysia was ruled by a coalition called Barisan Nasional, or the National Front. And the reason why that coalition worked was that you had a very strong Malay party within the coalition, and they practiced a thing called Malay dominance. So that system broke down because there was a split among the Malay elites. So when Pakatan came in, the Malay vote was split. So what has happened is that 2 years down the road, people are trying to rebuild the Malay vote into a single block. So that's exactly what you're seeing now. Malay politicians across the board in Malaysia are trying to build a Malay bloc to make sure that the Malays are supreme politically again.
Explain to me the significance of his timing. Why the resignation now, or the pseudo-resignation?
The resignation was essentially a political tactic. You have to remember, the way it works is that when the Prime Minister resigns and the party itself hasn't nominated a successor, by default, the entire government resigns as well. So he needed to resign in order to give himself maximum flexibility, a clean slate to start everything all over again.
When UMNO was defeated a couple of years ago, Ibrahim joined with Mahathir on condition that he would become PM in 2 years. That's the Kirribilli agreement. It's not going to happen, is it?
No, I don't think so. I think the general consensus in Malaysia is that deep down inside Mahathir thinks that Anwar is not the right person to inherit his legacy, and Anwar is not the right person to be the Prime Minister.
Did they ever really have an accord? It is now argued that Mahathir didn't agree to it.
They had an accord, but the accord was written in a very loose language. It simply states that 2 years down the road, if they were to win the last general election, that Mahathir would hand power over to Anwar. The problem with the way that it is written is that it gives Mahathir some flexibility, because what happened was when he came in, he mentioned that the mess left by the previous government was so huge, he's the only one who can stay back and clean up the mess. So he said he needs to be there and he needs more time in order to clean up the mess before he hands over power to Anwar.
We were talking about Putin in the last story, who manages to, to revive his fortunes and has become effectively president for life, rather like the incumbent in Beijing. Your bloke, this extraordinary 94-year-old, has the same sort of genius.
Yes, but if you look at the region, what we see now is actually a fast turn to the right. So if you look at Thailand, what's happening now is that the new king in Thailand is actually asserting his executive power, even though he's not supposed to have any real political power. If you look at the Philippines, you have a very right-wing president over there. If you look at places like Cambodia, you had a right-wing prime minister there for a very, very long time. And Singapore is going through an election as well, and you have the right-wing PAP government in power. So I think in some ways...
It's a slight contrast with Australia, isn't it, James, where the Prime Minister has a shelf life of yogurt.
Yes, I think in Australia it's slightly different. I think in Australia, if you make too many mistakes and you don't get the right press coverage, you're out.
Oh, I think if you make lots of mistakes, you still get the right press coverage and you're in, but that's for another occasion. I'm talking to James Chin, director of the Asia Institute in Tasmania. Tell me this, why did he resign both as head of the government and as chairman of his party?
Basically, what he was trying to do was he was trying to start on a clean slate. He wanted maximum flexibility to do what he wanted. So he didn't want to be tied down to the old Pakatan Harapan. He didn't want to be tied down to his old party. There's been a bit of misreporting. Even though he resigned from his party has not accepted his resignation. So he is still the chairman of Bersatu Party.
Now, James, there was so much optimism 2 years ago. What kind of ruling coalition might be put together and who would it represent?
Sure. I think going forward, if Mahathir is going to put together a new coalition, I think this coalition will be very fairly well endowed with a much more Malay side to it. It'll be much more Malay centric. I expect to see politicians from across the board. It is very likely that he'll select people not based on their party affiliation, but people who he knows will be loyal to him. I think one of the problems he had coming back as the Prime Minister second time around is that he's not used to people arguing with him. And it is my understanding that the first time when he was Prime Minister, Cabinet was very tame. But this time, I understand that the Cabinet had lots of arguments and he found it difficult to deal with. So I think he will select the people who will not challenge him. And I think he's also looking for two-thirds majority. So that will give him a super majority in the Malaysian Parliament, which means that nobody can challenge him.
In parenthesis, I have to ask you this. What's happening with the case, the immense financial scandal surrounding ex-PM Razak?
Right, the case is ongoing, so I don't expect the case to be completed anytime this year. It might go over next year. It is very likely that he'll be found guilty, but if we have a new government, things may change.
Now, this political crisis, of course, comes at a time when there are financial problems. There's the coronavirus outbreak. If there was an election, what do you think the public mood is likely to be, James?
I think the public is very, very negative about this government, especially the urban people. I think they don't understand why you have a manufactured crisis, when in fact the politicians should be trying to revive the Malaysian economy. The cost of living in Malaysia is quite high, wages are quite low, so they want the people, they want the government to fix the economy. So I think in the urban areas, Pakatan is likely to do very badly. But the situation is completely reversed in the rural areas where the majority of the Malay population are living. I think they're quite happy to see a new government and they're quite happy to see a Malay-dominated government.
James, the first time I spoke to Ibrahim, he'd spent so much time in the slammer and was allowed so few books that he'd become an authority on Shakespeare. But there's hardly a future career in that. So what are his options?
Well, I think his options are limited. If you were the assumption that Mahathir will get back into power as a full-time prime minister, this means that Ibrahim most probably will be out. Even if he's offered something in government, it'll be done in such a way that he's no longer able to challenge Mahathir directly. I think if Mahathir comes back and serves the full term, it is quite clear that Ibrahim's chance of becoming a future prime minister will be getting slimmer and slimmer.
James, thank you for your time. James Chin, director of the Asia Institute Tasmania at, yes, the University of Tasmania.